Gang, for the last few months, I've been using True Hemp Science CBD products, and I love them. True Hemp Science promises you premium quality, pure ingredients, and true value. They source the highest grade organic hemp from around the world to handcraft the finest full spectrum CBD products. And they offer a complete line of CBD products, including full spectrum CBD oils and tinctures, CBD skincare lotions and sports rubs, CBD gummies, and gluten-free chocolates. They number their CBD products to differentiate them by strain, by farm, and extraction method. Now, gang, you know, for in the last few episodes, I've talked about the different products. I talked about the number 81, which is great for relaxation and sleep, and I swear by that one. The number G41, which is absolutely fantastic for focus and giving you focus and all that stuff without stressing you out and giving you anxiety. Today, I'll be talking about the number 19, which is complete restoration. Now, this is great for day use. Yeah, the potential benefits include increased focus, increased serotonin levels, making you happier, and anti-inflammatory properties. Number 19 is a biodynamic organic CBD crafted with CBDA. Almost an entirely raw product with all of the acid compounds being intact. Made with organic MCT coconut oil as a base and added terpenes for flavor and effectiveness. Now, I love this stuff. I've been taking it for the last few days and I do feel its effect. This is how I've been doing it. I've been taking this stuff and then I don't take the stuff for a couple days and then I take it again and see how it's actually affecting me. And I notice that this one does sort of like lift my mood a bit. It gives me a little bit more focus. And I love being able to focus like this without high levels of caffeine making me nervous and anxious. So True Hemp Science number 19 is great for day use in that way. Now, gang, How Did I Get Here has partnered with True Hemp Science for something very special. That's right. Purchase $65 or more worth of regular price products. Use the code HDIGH and receive a 296 milliliter bottle of number 81, which is great for rest, relaxation, and sleep. Gang, True Hemp Science is great. Go to TrueHempScience.com for all of your True Hemp Science needs. Use the code HDIGH for your special free number 81, 296 milligrams. That's nothing to sneeze at, baby. Get yourself a good night rest. Go there and check out all their stuff. And if you live in Austin, you can find them there on the by the Soup Peddler on the corner of South First Street and Mary. But go to TrueHempScience.com. Look through their products. I'm sure there's something there for you that'll help you. Whenever you buy something from them, it helps us out. All right? TrueHempScience.com. Get yourself some CBD. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here?
I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys all had a good weekend, whatever it is you did this weekend. I'm actually doing this on Saturday. Maybe you Super Bowled on Sunday. Maybe I'll Super Bowl on Sunday. I have no idea what I'm doing on Sunday. I do know. Yeah, you know what? I do know. I'll probably tell you about it on Wednesday's show. This show's dropping on a Monday. But I think I'm going on Sunday to Kathy Valentine's book signing at Barnes & Noble. Isn't that exciting? Yeah, I'm going to go see my friend. Isn't that weird? I think she's going to do a reading and stuff. I just want to go see what she does. Seems like it'll be fun. And I want to go support my friend. Her book is fucking great. Don't forget, get out there and check it out. All I Ever Wanted, Rock and Roll Memoir by Kathy Valentine. A little plug for her. Oh, and this show is dropping on a Monday because there's three shows this week. But this Monday, today, the day this show comes out, is Valentine's Day. So happy Valentine's Day to you and whoever your Valentine's Day is. Okay, or if you don't have a Valentine's Day, congratulations, bro or sis, you're out of the zone. You don't have to worry about anything today. You can't go anywhere because people are just smooching and loving it up everywhere. But you can do what you do. I'm gonna go to the movies. I already bought my tickets. I'm gonna go see Licorice Pizza. I've been excited to see that movie. It's up for Best Picture. I've seen a couple of the Best Pictures. Are you guys Oscar people? You get into the movies and I got to see the movies. It's like 10 movies this year. And I've seen The Power of the Dog, which is on Netflix. Fucking great movie. I highly recommend that. I'm going to see Licorice Pizza. I did see a movie that I really don't think belongs as a Best Picture of the Year. And that's Don't Look Up. I'm a huge Andy McKay fan, but I just could Adam McKay. Sorry, I'm a huge Adam McKay fan, and I did that movie. That movie didn't rock my boat. There was some stuff I thought was funny, but I thought it was too messagey and constantly pounding this message into your head that you don't really need pounded because you know that the asteroid's coming. You know what I mean? Like all this metaphor. You know what I mean? Like the same. I had the same reaction when I saw Avatar. And then those movies feel long. And even though I did think some of the stuff in Don't Look Up was funny, I watched it on Christmas Day with my cousin Emily, all right? And we were sitting there in recliners in my grandma's living room, a little hungover, all right? And so we start watching this. Hey, we're going to watch this movie. We both love Adam McKay. Put it on. I'm a huge fan of that movie, Vice. If you've ever seen it, check it out. It's a great movie. So we put on this Don't Look Up movie. And it was long, and neither one of us, I would have turned it off if I was watching it by myself. She would have turned it off if she was watching it by herself. But the thing is, we never talked about it. We just thought the other one wanted to watch it, so the other one endured it on behalf of the other one. So when the movie was over, my aunt said, hey, how was that movie? I said, it was terrible. And my cousin Emily said, me too. Why didn't we stop it? I said, I thought you liked it. She thought I liked it. That's a terrible story, but that really did happen on Christmas Day. Anyway, there's a bunch of other movies. I'm going to try and check them out. If you have any movie recommendations, let me know. I did enjoy the Book of Boba Fett. I don't know why I'm telling you about shit I've been watching, but I just want to let you know. I've been watching some stuff. The Book of Boba Fett was great. I really enjoyed it. If you're a Star Wars person like I am, it really tickles a certain itch. Great show on Disney if you have it. The Book of Boba Fett. I have to thank my friend Gabe Rhodes for hooking me up with Disney. I wouldn't get Disney. I wouldn't. I don't want to watch a bunch of Marvel shit. No offense. There's some stuff I liked. I liked that WandaVision show. But then I haven't really... I watched another show after that they had, and I watched like half an episode, and I was like, oh yeah, I don't want them to watch this shit. Anyway, I liked the Star Wars Boba Fett movie. I liked The Power of the Dog. I'm going to see Licorice Pizza, and I didn't like Don't Look Up. So that's the Oscars. My Oscar predictions are I've only seen one of the movies, and maybe that one will win because it's really good. Gang, I have a great show for you today. A great show. Jackson Albrecht from Slow Mo Drags is on the show today. They have a brand new EP dropping on Spaceflight Records on Friday, February 25th, and they are celebrating. It's called Twin Absorber. Their EP is called Twin Absorber, drops February 25th on Spaceflight Records, and they are celebrating with a release show on Friday, February 25th at Hotel Vegas. I will be there. This is going to be great. I'm excited to see them play live. I think this band is great. I saw them live a while back, quite a few years ago. Reached out to them, never heard back, but now we're talking, and getting to meet Jackson was fantastic. He is hilarious. In fact, his girlfriend is Avery Moore, who's been on the show, fantastic comedian, someone I think is probably the funniest person in Austin. She's one of the co-hosts of the Austin Music Awards this year. Very exciting. Anyway, Jackson and his band, Slow Mo Drags, their new EP, Twin Absorber, absolutely fantastic. You can check out the single Pepsi Cola Addict. It's out now. I will play it on the show as well. Great band. We have a great conversation about sort of their journey as a band, his journey as an artist and writer, songwriter, and music maker. Working with the great Danny Reich on this record. Also working with Matt Parmenter, my friend over at Ice Cream Factory Studios. Both guys have been on the show. I'm a huge fan of both of their work. You can find them at slowmodrags.com, but get your tickets for their show February 25th at Hotel Vegas. Make sure you get their EP when it drops on Spaceflight Records on February 25th. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with the incredibly hilarious and extremely cool Jackson Albrecht from Slow Mo Drags. Let's get down.
Do a line and write a chord progression, go to heaven. Here in hell, I light my cigarette off the wall. Take me to the storm. Need a steak and six beers. Every band in this town sounds like...
How are you doing, Jackson?
I'm doing good. Nice to meet you. How's it going?
It's going good.
Unless we have...
I was looking up your email today to listen to your record, and then there was an old email that I sent you guys from 2017, and then I remembered I saw you but I can't remember where. It was like Mohawk or something like that.
Yeah, that would I'd believe it.
But I remember I liked you guys a lot when I saw you enough to write you when I got home.
Ah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I remember. I mean, I could go to the source right now, find out what's going on there.
It was like management at Slow Mo Drive. I don't know where I got the email or something. Anyway, your new EP that drops on February 25th, Twin Absorber, is fucking awesome, dude. It is awesome.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, man. Like, I'm really interested. Do you guys consider yourselves like a modern power pop band?
You know, I guess so. I don't really know what power pop really means. You know, like sometimes I think about maybe some like Big Star.
Yeah.
Or like to me, power pop sounds like decade specific, maybe.
70s.
Yeah, I think so. But like, I like that kind of shit. You know what I mean? And like, I think probably pop, I think of ourselves as more pop than like rock. I mean, even though
yes,
that might not be accurate, but like it's the pop sensibility
right.
that defines what I'm interested in more so than the fact that we're like really, really guitar oriented, you know?
Right. And it, and you get a lot of dreamy guitar sounds too. There's almost like a shoegazer vibe to your,
Yeah, we, I like the textural shit a lot. And historically, we're a band of guitar players who have, some of us play guitar and some of us have decided to play bass or keyboards and stuff. But like most of the folks in the band have a guitar background, and it seems like most of the stuff that we do comes out through the guitar textures, you know, and like lots of vocal harmonies and stuff. But
how does the writing happen?
That's pretty much me.
You're a great songwriter, man.
Like, thank you, man. Really appreciate that. Thank you.
Really, really. That kid's song, that opening song, such a great song.
That
also,
one's been around for a million years. Me, Mari, who plays guitar in this band, who's on a little bit of this EP, her and I have been playing music since mid 2000s in San Antonio. And that was one of the songs from our old band that's been kicking around for like a decade and finally got around to kind of recording it. So. I'm glad I like it.
The single that's out, the Pepsi Cola Addict song, is really great. The whole
Thank
give
you.
The people want what they want, they only want something stupid, is is a brilliant line.
Thank you. It's you know, we're our whole thing is kind of like, you know, I like beautiful music that's just kind of talking shit all the time. You know, I like Elliott Smith and Steely Dan. I don't think we really sound like either of those two things, but that's like, those are my guiding lights in my musical life for a long time going.
No, but you had that. What was the name? I'm drawing a blank on the name of that. Of the
my dog store.
The Steely Dan sounding name.
The last record was called Deacon Brews.
That's right, Deacon Brews.
Yeah,
that song Guns on there is great.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, man. Okay, so what happened? How did you get into Steely Dan?
I don't know. Like, I remember it was one of my best friend Aaron's favorite bands, and his dad kind of got him into it. And that was his shit for a long time. And I remember thinking like, this doesn't appeal to me whatsoever, on a musical level. Right. And then there must have been a couple songs. Yeah, sir.
May I stop you right there and say like, did it feel like overworked and too thought out to really enjoy the music?
You know, that actually didn't bother me because I tend to gravitate towards like really manicured, like ridiculous ornamented shit. But I just melodically, it didn't do anything for me. Like there was no like,
right.
There was nothing in the music that gave me an emotional distinct feeling of any kind for a long time until it did. And then I got obsessed with that.
Right. Right.
And I think there's something about when you like have written something off and it doesn't appeal to you.
Right.
And it almost becomes a taboo. And the moment that like you find some sort of way into it, then it becomes sort of an obsession. You know, it's kind of like, you know, it's almost like, like a forbidden sexual proclivity or something
right,
like
right,
that.
Right.
You know, it's just like all of a sudden, like I felt like very naughty that I was craving like this jazz rock shit. but you know, they have like a couple tunes where it's like there's a song called like the Royal Scam. I'm sorry, not the Royal Scam, but the Boston Rag off of Countdown to Ecstasy. And the melody in that verse is like a double tracked, kind of breathier, like more like John Lennon-y influenced kind of Elliott Smith sounding type of melody. And so like, it was when I like heard a few examples of their shit that had those things that are like my natural state that I was like, okay, this does have stuff
right
in there that like appeals to me on that kind of like sad boy, beautiful thing. And then once I realized that everything they were doing was talking shit and kind of sarcastic.
Yeah.
That was when I was like, okay. So now even like the cheesiest and like slickest stuff they do, because I have an idea of where they're coming from. Now that makes this cheesy stuff like cool as fuck to me. You know,
right.
That dichotomy became like really, really, really hilarious to me and like appealed to me quite a bit. So yeah, it was a slow burn, and it took a few kind of like, I had to like put together what I was going to get out of it. And then, you know, that was it.
Did you ever think
at that point,
go ahead.
I say at that point, I'd already listened to all like the Elliott Smith records so many times that, you know, to have something new to dive into with a large breadth of catalog was like, right. Well, now this is just going to be my identity for the next 5 years or whatever.
I have this, it's too bad you didn't come over. I have this, this awesome set list that my old tour manager got for me from the Figure Eight tour. That was actually his set list in front of him with like a footprint on it and shit.
Is it too late to come over?
No, we'll do this again sometime, man. I love this record. I mean,
oh man, thanks so much.
Yeah. This is just it's fucking great. Like you're such a great songwriter. And then it has things like, hold on, let me look on this, actually the SoundCloud thing. Cause there's also like Twin Absorber, like the 38 seconds of mm-hmm. that has a My Bloody Valentine vibe to it.
So that, that little thing was, used to be in the song Pepsi Cola Addict. And, by virtue of, you know, having recorded this to a click track, I kind of had this revelation one day that like this song probably doesn't need like three bridges. Like, let's get rid of one of the bridges.
Right.
It's been like a life pursuit of mine to like stop adding so many parts to the songs, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I embrace fully that we're like elaborate and like, I think it's fine to be sprawling, but you have to understand that and take a measured approach. And if you're going to put out like more than one song at a time, they shouldn't all have the same shape. They shouldn't all have the same amount of moving parts.
Right.
So with that one, I was like, well, this is like my favorite part in the song. And the way we arranged it, like you certainly can't tell because it's super blown out. We cut that whole thing, left it on the cutting room floor. And then I was like, oh, well shit, let's just destroy it with distortion. We'll make it a little link track in the thing. It'll be a perfect intro to the song that it came from. It'll look like there's more songs on the album, so we can charge a reasonable price and try to make our money back at the merch stand over perhaps 3 to 4 years time. And, you know, it all works out. And I really like what it brings to the record. But we did a cool thing when we played it live. It was like, it was just kind of written in, the chord progression was kind of written just in three parts. Like it was just like a three note voicing that I played on guitar, and live we would split it up. Like I'd have the bass player play the low note, I played the middle note, and the other guitar player played the high note. So we did it kind of in this like kind of choral kind of thing. I mean, it sounded cool, and it was just like a fun, clever trick to do. So it was emotional for me to let go of that part of the song. So I was like, well, I don't have to let go of it if we just fucking put it somewhere else on the record, which is also true of the second track, Why Am I? That was originally that first song was just like a 5 minute kind of thing that had this weird shit at the end. And I realized, well, if we just chop that off right there, then I have a 3.5 minute song. I don't have to feel guilty about writing songs that are too long, and I can keep the fucking material in the first place. So it was like a really great way for me to trick myself into thinking I wasn't writing really long songs. And again, to, you know, have more material on this record, because we can't afford vinyl, and I don't think anyone can even get vinyl made right now. So we're going to make the dubious decision of printing some CDs and just try to guilt some people into paying for them at the merch stand. It's kind of an appeal to be a patron of ours, as a, you know, whether or not the format means anything is going to be relevant to them or not. At least on the very back, it'll say there's six songs on there. You know, it won't say that it's 19 minutes long. They don't need to know that.
Right.
So I'm not very, am I doing a good job at capitalism here? Like full, undermining this thing I'm about to put on a credit card that I just got approved for just to do this shit? I don't know if this is a very measured decision here. That's why I'm a good podcast guest.
You fucking,
totally disrespectful of my own enterprise.
You could do stand-up on just releasing a record on CD.
I wouldn't be allowed to say. I think you know my girlfriend, Avery Moore.
Oh, she's I love Avery Moore. She's actually been here.
She told me that. She said that I was going to have a great time, that you were really, really cool.
Wow. So she is cool. She is she's one of my favorite comedians around.
Yeah, she's one of the best we got.
Yeah, and plus the whole minute by minute.
She does have a Doobie Brothers tattoo.
Yeah, dude.
Well, and you know what, actually that's it, we've been together for a long time, and before we moved here from San Antonio, one of her friends from the theater she used to work at, the Children's Theater, made her a mix of like Doobie Brothers and like Steely Dan stuff. So I think actually that CD probably also contributed to my interest in that. I'm not going to say yacht rock. I don't think that's a term used by people with much reverence or understanding for it, but in general, that kind of arena of shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. To me, yacht rock, just at the basis of it, are people that use like minor sevenths and major sevenths, and have a Rhodes, and I used to think they needed a percussionist. I feel like you kind of need a conga guy in there to really make it
that
happen.
Sounds about right. Well, anything that's like, anything that implies water has a tinge of maybe a Caribbean or exotic flair to it. You know, you kind of, all of a sudden you want something else in there that, you know, you want to go to Margaritaville. You want to do
is that
something
rock,
like that.
Margaritaville seems to me like some kind of weird, like party boy
probably,
Americana.
I mean, it's definitely, well, like it's not yacht rock, but like Jimmy Buffett like owns a yacht, you know what I mean? And like his shit's all about like sailing. If anything's going to be yacht rock, you know, we're getting outside of the associations. But like, if I'm thinking critically about the definitions, I'm like, well, that dude's the one on the yacht. Yeah. That one's got, you know, he's got the steel drums going. So I don't know. Like I don't think Steely Dan wants to be on a boat. I don't think like Donald Fagen's taking his shoes off.
There's and there's no way he's getting
like,
in
he
the
wants
sun.
To smoke a cigarette backstage and be angry.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I read his book that he has during quarantine, and he's got like a tour diary of one of his bands. He's on tour with not Steely Dan, but this other ensemble he put together. And at one point he talks about how he was fantasizing about the audience, like there being a theater fire and watching them all go up in flames. And he's like, I went and like kind of like made a joke about it to my background singers, and I think I freaked him out. So yeah, I don't think he's like fun in the sun or anything like that. So
no.
Anyways, you know, I just try not to, you know, I'm trying not to go with like music criticism-y catchphrases like that too much, you know, because oftentimes that's the enemy.
Yeah.
If, you know, angry purists like myself, or angry non-purists, whichever I am.
Did you?
I'm happy. I don't know what I'm saying. I'm not any of that shit. I'm a good boy. I aim to please.
Jackson, did you ever get into a band called Jellyfish?
Yeah, Jellyfish is dope.
Yeah.
I like Jellyfish a lot. I know they loosely had an associate. I think John Bryan did some guitars for one of their records.
The second record, yeah.
And any, you know, John Bryan is an ultimate hero of mine. And yeah, when I first heard Jellyfish, I was in college. I'll be 34 next month. So like, you know, a while back. And at first I didn't quite care for it. and then I, you know, slowly but surely.
Well, it's funny because
I got fully into it.
Yeah. I loved them from the moment I heard them, just because I'm 53 and it just kind of sounded like new music from 1975 that I had never heard before. You know what I mean?
I think the only thing I didn't like about it was just maybe a little bit of production style on it. Cause like, you know, they were coming through with like, you know, gorgeous harmonies, right, cool right, Beach right, Boys right. influence stuff. I liked all the Queen influence stuff or something. It was just, there was something like about it that I didn't like. I never even disliked it. I just, when I first got exposed to it, I was like, oh yeah, this is cool. It sounds a little like, I think it was just the way the drums sounded and the guitars sounded a little too like 90s hard rock. I was like, that's a little weird. But you know, who gives a fuck? They're fucking awesome. Very cool band.
Three of those guys have a new band. Like everyone except the drummer singer guy from that second touring band.
Oh yeah, what's it called?
Because I followed the quartet.
Yeah,
they've actually been on the show a couple of times.
No kidding.
Yeah.
What's the keyboard player's
Roger.
Name? He's so good. He's
yeah.
I love his Instagram presence. He's constantly giving short but informative and entertaining tutorials of all of his vintage synthesizer collection. And
yeah,
you know, if you're gonna make shit for me, that'll be it, you know?
Yeah. I'm 53, and in the 90s, he had a band called Imperial Drag, and that kind of came to an end, but he still had a record deal. And my lawyer had given his A&R guy my demo or something, and we were at one point going to work on stuff together. We never did, but we ended up staying, whatever.
In touch.
People that know each other. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Got a couple of those.
Yeah. But anyway, they're a great band. I want to talk about.
I have to sneeze.
Go ahead. See, now I'm glad it was Zoom. If that shit would have been here, I would have been like, oh, God damn it.
Yeah.
Here we go.
And I don't cover my mouth when I do it either. Yeah. I'm one of those people.
Danny Reich and Matt Parmenter co-produced the record. Both guys have been on the show. They're both friends of mine.
That's half true. Matt just did some supplemental kind of recording on it. So,
oh, okay.
Danny co-produced it. Matt, we did like a session or two at Ice Cream Factory, but he did the last record. So me and Matt go way back. Matt's my dude. We've done a ton of shit together. But yeah.
He's a great guy, and that's a great studio, huh?
Oh yeah, I'm jealous. They just totally like about like I don't know half a year after we recorded there, it got like a major upgrade with like lots and lots of the coolest cool shit. So I need to go back there and get in on their like 10 Neve channels that are there that didn't exist, and like they got like a. You know, Fairchild that's, you know, worth more than
oh, really?
Either of our lives combined and stuff. Yeah, they got a real wild upgrade over there, which, you know, I didn't even know anything about that shit really when we made a record there, but
now you do.
Now I do. Yeah. So I want to go touch it. Exactly. I want to go take a selfie with the compressor.
So Danny's a great guy, man, and his work is just always so great. There's like a number of fucking great producer guys here in town that are just, they're so solid, you know? And Matt's definitely one of them.
Both of those guys are killing it. Both of those guys are doing shit that is constantly, you know, reaching an audience, and they're constantly working with people who are upper echelon, you know, within the local scene and beyond. And it's, you know, it's obvious why, because their work is so great. And, you know, Danny is such obviously a monster, engineer. But he's a great drummer, you know, and, he has a bunch of great sounding drums there, and he knows really, really how to record them. So it's, you know, it's kind of hard to argue with a guy who is a master of their instrument as well as a master of recording it. And if you go record with them, you're going to get to use his gear that is kept immaculately in tune and, you know, just how to operate it. So it's pretty easy to get some really great sounding work done there, which, you know, obviously you start with the drums, maybe drums and bass and rhythm guitar a lot of the time. And, you know, when things sound that awesome from the get go, like while you're recording, it's hard not to be super inspired and engaged by the whole process. You know, it's when you know that it's going to sound killer, cause like it already does. And obviously most musicians know that the, you probably care first and foremost about having real badass drum sounds. So when you know off the bat that it's happening, it's, you know, it doesn't suck.
It all starts there, man. Well, it all starts with the song, but as far as recording goes, you got to have drums that sound badass.
Yeah. And they're the hardest thing to get done.
Yeah. So Spaceflight Records, when did they come on board? Is this your first record for them or did you do your last?
No, the last record had no affiliations, no support. And I regretted doing that as soon as we did it. We were kind of out of time. And, the EP we had done before, we had done it in with this tape label out of New York. And, you know, it was just those kind of, little blogs and reviews that you get back internationally because you're affiliated, even with just like a niche tape label, that we didn't really get with the full length record. And so I was like, well, that was a mistake. We need to always be working with someone for the sake of, you know, all of the things associated with that. But we did, Adam is neighbors with Brett from Spaceflight. And we played a show with Lowen, my friend Sarah Howard, Hauser's band.
Yeah.
And she was putting out something on Spaceflight. And we were playing that show. And we had this record almost in the can. And so we were playing the show. It was like there was a good amount of people there. I had a feeling the Spaceflight people might be there. We were doing our job sufficiently well during the show. And I made sort of a cheeky remark about, like, if you want to hear these songs, they'll be out soon. They're all basically recorded. And perhaps if you have a label and you want to put these out, you could do that as well. And, you know, assuming that maybe somebody from that label would be there, and they were, and they, I think Brett ran into Adam in the street and was like, "Hey, you guys are cool. Let me know if you want to put out some music." So I'll take credit for that, manipulative, public statement that I made on stage, and that kind of got the ball rolling. And Adam's relationship with Brett was, allowed them to get together on that. And, due to the, global unpleasantness, it's taken like a full, I don't know, like we were probably almost done tracking. We were ready to start mixing the record in like April, 2020, but that got pushed back so long, that affected our ability to self-finance just getting it mixed and mastered. And then by the time that all came together, you know, Spaceflight was like, well, we need to kind of sequence this with the rest of our stuff that's coming out for the
right,
calendar year.
We can't just jump out.
So
there.
Now it's because that's not how it works. And right. So it's just finally coming out. It feels like an eternity, but Spaceflight is definitely the shit.
Yeah, man. They,
they've been incredibly helpful.
Yeah. I actually had them on a couple of months ago and, just learning how they do their thing. And it's so beautiful to see, you know, fans. There's a few other labels around that are of the same ilk. They don't really have the fucking, like, I mean, like Spaceflight has like a roster, like Columbia Records or some shit. You know what I mean? Like it's a lot of fucking people.
Totally.
And they do a great job with everyone. I mean, as far as I can tell, you know?
I mean, yeah. And I'm so like inept when it comes to like releasing, promoting, doing anything like that is like, I suck at it, you know, and I'm ignorant about like a lot of what needs to happen. So it's been incredibly helpful to have them sort of, you know, hold my hand and, sort of let me know that shit has to get done. And not only that, just like, you know, actually send out press releases and handle all that kind of all the local stuff has been really great, you know?
Yeah.
I'm eternally grateful. Did you have Samara and Brett on?
Yes,
who were on the show?
Yes, I did.
Cool. Yeah, Samara's been, and Stephanie have been great, but Samara's been doing a ton of stuff the last couple, like the last week or so, for us to try to make the release a good thing, like such as setting this thing up, you know, which
yeah,
I would have just been at home, you know,
crying
always, you know, crying into my beer.
So you're from San Antonio?
Yeah.
What was it like growing up there?
I was born in Dallas, but don't tell anybody that.
I won't.
Okay.
When did you move to San Antonio?
Before the first grade. So
okay.
I grew up there for a good long time. San Antonio was cool. Got a lot of formative experiences and years in there. And I moved to Austin when I was 24. So from like 19 to 24, I was playing in a band in San Antonio and doing the local scene that what is there. And
yeah,
there's a great band called Buttercup from San Antonio.
That's amazing.
Buttercup's probably my favorite band ever. Me and Mari from this band from Slow Mo Drags, their guitar player in Buttercup, Joe Reyes,
one of my favorite dudes.
Joe Reyes is the best dude of all time. He was like, he was our sort of, I don't know, guiding light. He recorded both of our old band's records, my stuff and Mari's old stuff. And, you know, to this day, he's one of my favorite guitar players and obviously favorite people. And that whole band is just amazing. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Eric Sandin and Odie are just unbelievable people. So when I think about San Antonio, I think about Buttercup and the other bands that were kind of our homies in the crew.
Yeah.
And, you know, back there, which is like, so there's some great bands. We Leave at Midnight is a really amazing band. And Hawks of Holy Rosary are great. And Chris Madden is amazing. So I had a really nice, tight knit kind of group of people that I thought were super talented. And we all had a good time.
What was that acoustic room like 15 years ago? Do you remember that acoustic room? And it was in like a warehouse place and this crazy drunk French lady owned it.
Was it the Mattress Factory?
No.
The red room.
It was red inside. And
I think I know what you're talking about. I don't know if I ever went there.
Room and
yeah. Buttercup played there though. I'll ask Mari. She would know.
Those Buttercup guys were doing like art.
Was it the
galleries and shit like that? Weren't they?
Well, they had a show called Grackle Monday that they would do. That was at a kind of DIY spot at the Elbow Room. Maybe it was called. I don't remember the name of it, but they were always kind of occupying shit like that. And there was, the Mattress Factory was a thing too, which was an art gallery in Southtown.
Those guys had a band, and Charlie Rodman, you know him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love Charlie.
So with Charlie, they had a band in the 90s called Evergreen.
Yeah. And Eric's told me some stories. I know they opened up for Elliot Smith at Liberty Lunch or something like that.
That's,
I think, is
awesome.
That the way I heard it? Yeah, that's the way I heard it.
I was in a band. We did shows together, and we did this weird cable convention one time, and we all had this room up in Dallas. And I just remember hanging out, and like having like the bathtub filled with beer and ice and shit,
oh, yeah.
And like partying with Odie, and Odie singing all of his dirty songs. Like,
yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Odie's one of the most original characters of all time. I love Odie. And Eric Sandin is one of the most
such a sweet dude.
Amazing frontmen of all time too. Yeah, absolutely.
And Joe Reyes, to me, Joe Reyes is like the John Bryan of San Antonio. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
No, 100%. He is that guy. And you know, Joe's solo output is so beautiful as well.
Totally. I've had him on the show.
Really? Oh,
yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Like my old band was called Cartographers, and we were on we put out a record on Bedlam.
Oh, really?
Records, the label that Eric basically made to put out all the Buttercup stuff and Demitasse and all that stuff.
Oh yeah, Demitasse.
Mm-hmm. Half a cup.
Did you
so clever?
Did you ever hear that weird record Charlie made about the Peloponnesian Wars?
Athens versus Sparta.
Yeah,
was that the name? That was the name of the band, right?
Wars?
And the record. Uh huh.
Yeah.
I've seen them live. They played at they played in San Antonio with Buttercup and played a show at Casbeer's. after it was, or it, maybe it wasn't called Casbury's at the time, but it's like the church downtown San Antonio,
right?
Which is just such a great place to see such a fucking weird show, you know, with voiceover and masks and like the most Eyes Wide Shut. Like it was like if Granddaddy was scoring Eyes Wide Shut or something like that. You know, so weird, but like awesome. But yeah, I love Charlie Rudman. He's super cool.
He is such a cool guy, man. He was like an early sponsor of the show. Because you remember he used to do those 420, those weed laws for musicians.
Yeah, you see it in all the urinals and bathroom stalls at all the bars and stuff.
So who else were you listening to back then when you were kind of like, when did you first get out and play? How old were you?
I started playing really young. I was the youngest of like five kids, some stepbrothers and sisters and half brothers and shit like that. So I started playing drums in the first grade, and I would play like with my brothers and stuff like that and friends. And then I started a band in the sixth grade, and we would play the talent show every year. We would play a System of a Down or Deftones cover because I was brought to that of that generation. Eventually I didn't have my brother's tastes and, you know, started liking good music. Although I guess if you want to be real about it, System of a Down and Deftones have kind of survived the the new metal thing, and I think are thought of with more reverence than your Limp Bizkits and Korn,
right,
of the era. But I that was kind of the classic middle school, pre 9/11 era thing. And
but also
high school,
like,
I was,
like the general vibe at that time, like radio wise in San Antonio, was very fucking like metal.
Oh yeah, well it still is going strong. I don't think that'll ever change.
Yeah,
it's one of the most hard rocking cities there ever was and ever will be.
Right, that's like one of the only places you hear like Iron Maiden on the radio anymore.
Yeah, well, and you know, like that radio station, like 99.5 Kiss, like they've had the same playlist forever. Like maybe they add like a couple songs a year, but mostly it stays the same. But you know, I got to see like the Toadies and when I was in eighth grade, they were first like general admission show at Sunset Station. And that was a transformative experience for sure. That was great. And then, you know, in high school is when I started playing in bands that were actually sort of playing in public venues. And, you know, I did my time playing in like pretty ill-informed bad punk bands.
Did you play Taco Land?
I never played Taco Land. That was, I think Ram got, you know, killed and all that shit.
Right.
Just a little bit before I started going out and playing shows.
Okay.
We were playing at like Sam's Burger Joint was kind of where we played.
Yeah, yeah.
My first show in public was at a room in off Calabria Road called Texas Murder Music. That was just a room with nothing in it. And a bathroom. and I got my guitar stolen my first show. I ever played guitar in a band there. Good times. And so yeah, did that shit. And briefly did the, like, we had kind of like a ska punk kind of band that would like, which was more fixated on this scene out of New York that was like all about like being very offensive and smoking crack and killing cops and stuff. That was like their whole, you know, thing. And, you know, so we were suburban, you know, privileged white kids who fancied ourselves crust punk, homeless people from New York. And, that was kind of the thing for like, you know, my just before driver's license years. And that kind of led to an affinity for, like real Jamaican ska music and like bands like the Slackers out of New York who are, you know, actually playing good music. And that kind of got me into, that was like when I started doing any vocal harmony kind of stuff in any of my bands. And, you know, that kind of led to, you know, rediscovering the Beatles and getting into Of Montreal and Elliott Smith and all the indie rock shit, all the Elephant Six stuff, Neutral Milk Hotel and all that kind of stuff that would kind of end up being a defining kind of presence, and you know, is still something that kind of most of my listening is kind of centered around in a lot of ways, or at least my tastes anyways, you know.
Yeah it's interesting because it we absorb all of these influences And there's like, you know, like the story of Please Please Me, the Beatles
I don't think
song.
I do.
They were trying to write a Roy Orbison song, like a song.
Oh, is that right?
And like, when you have that in your head, you're like, oh, fuck, it really kind of does. Like, you can hear him going, please, please me, oh, right. Yeah. You know what? But when
I love
goes,
that. I didn't know that.
When it goes through the filter of John and Paul, like, those influences come out as them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. I think people get really, like, writers, they get really self-conscious because you have this thing that tells you, like, if it's not totally original and totally great, then you can't put that out. That can't be a thing you did. But almost nobody does anything that's like,
it's hard,
even close to fully original. Yeah. And all you have, and it's like, there's really nothing wrong with just literally pretending to be someone else, writing a song. And like, guess what? Unless you're like literally copying every single like sound they use, people probably aren't even going to be able to tell that that's what you're, you know, that was the genesis of that song in the first place. Cause most stuff is just going to sound like you doing it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right now I'm working on some music for like a side project that may or may not come together with a few friends of mine that all kind of sing and write songs in their other bands. And, you know,
like
I just wanted to do something.
Or something like a four front man band or something.
Yeah, kind of. I can't divulge anything because I want it to be interesting when it does happen. It's pretty tongue in cheek. I just recently acquired a turtleneck for the express purposes of this group, and it's kind of changed me as a human being. Also, in fact, I'm ashamed to not be wearing one right now. I think I'm like worried about like the summertime. What am I going to do with my new turtleneck and my new identity? It's very tongue in cheek, very like, romantic, but kind of like cocaine and insane kind of egomania. So I guess a little bit Eaglesy, but aesthetically not so much. But it's been really interesting to write. Like I've been like all of these songs have just been coming out. Like my output has been like a lot, like significantly steadier, and I've been more prolific than I had been in the past, because the moment you stop like being like, oh, this has to be for slow-mo drags, we don't need another one of these kind of songs, we wouldn't play a song like this live, all that kind of shit. And you're like, whatever, let's just make something. And it doesn't even have to represent me as a person. You know, all you got to do is trick yourself into thinking you're not writing for yourself. And then it's much, much easier to just kind of let these ideas flow. So I've been kind of exploring that vantage point right now. It's been really interesting.
Yeah. That's always fun to do. It's almost like getting to write in a character or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of that Lonely Hearts Club Band kind of approach. You know, it's just like, just say it doesn't have to be you. Just make a recording. Don't think about like, you know, so, we don't play like ballads. We don't play down tempo shit. We don't have these instruments in the band. Like,
right.
Who cares about it? Who cares? You know? That's not a headspace you should be in while you're trying to come up with a piece of music anyways, you know?
Yeah.
It's not helpful.
How do you write? Do you have time that you set aside to work all the time on it, or does it, you wait till it comes to you or what?
Yeah, I definitely don't have any structure. All of like the Twin Absorber record was definitely written with me like walking around the apartment with my electric guitar unplugged, fucking around. And when an idea would hit, then I would just kind of go with it. But as far as I was concerned, the rest of the time I was just playing guitar, you know?
Yeah.
And now, like a couple months into the, or, you know, however long into the initial lockdown of 2020, one of my buddies, Sterling Stefan, who did the saxophone arrangement on Twin Absorber on the song Professional Music.
Right, right.
And the flutes at the end of YMI. Almost said TMI. Yeah, right. No way. He hit me up and was like, hey, what's going on? I said, oh, not much, man. He was like, let me know if you want any saxophone arrangements. I'm bored at the house. I said, well, I don't have any money or anything like that. So, and he's like, no, man. I'm just saying, like, I'm bored. Like, it's not like that. I was like, all right, well, if you want to fuck with anything, that's great. And I was belly aching to him about the fact that I didn't have a recording set up at my house. And at that point I just had a like a Boss digital delay pedal that I have, like the DD3. It has like a hold button on it. So if you play a chord, you can hold it down with your foot. It'll play that chord, you know? And then I could like play guitar over it. You know, that was like all I had to do, like sound stacking. And I was like, man, I wish I had put together some sort of a studio before this. But alas, I don't own a computer and all this shit. And he was like, well, I got a broken laptop that you can come pick up from my house. It's like, just has a broken screen, but I have a external monitor from 2004. You can hook up to it. It'll probably work. So he lent me that. And my drummer had an interface, and my bass player lent me a busted, fucked up SM58 that used to be at the Scoot Inn for a long time. So, you know, it takes a village, and the village came together around old baby Jay and hooked me up with a, you know, very minimalistic laptop garage band capable recording setup. And that kind of spiraled. And then my bass player then brought me over a pirated copy of Logic I moved up to that from GarageBand, and that necessitated a new computer. So I had to like figure out how to do that. And so it went from a thing that was like recording was not a part of my life whatsoever. And now it's this huge part of my life. And like, I've just engineered like the Slimma Drag song. That'll be a single after this record comes out, and I'm doing the ACC engineering program and all that kind of stuff.
Fantastic,
now,
man.
But all of that to say this. Yeah. Totally. Tim's the shit. I was like, hey, you know, I had to like email him for something. He was like, oh, I know you. I play your song on my radio. And I was like, cool. I'm gonna tell my mom that. She's gonna think that's real cool. And she did think that was cool. And but having a computer and having a recording setup has certainly changed my writing process. It's just you know, now any idea that I have, I don't have to wait until band practice to kind of see how it would shake an arrangement. And it's also, and like, there's just so many different approaches you can take to writing a song. Like, you know, where everything used to just come from my guitar and singing, you know, there's a song we play in our set right now that needs to be recorded and released that like just started with vocal harmonies. Like I was driving to the liquor store and I was like, oh, I had this little kind of lyric in my head that was almost something. And then like, by the time I got back, it was a thing. And I was like, well, I'm not going to find out the chords and like write a song around it. I'm going to like put like a kick drum 4 on the floor and like give myself like a starting pitch. And I'm just going to build up from like vocals. Like I'm just going to make my melody. I'm going to write vocal harmonies over it. And then I'll kind of go back and like, start stacking some like bass notes with the synth or whatever underneath it. And like, I'll find where the chord progression is going to be like in reverse, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's a luxury of having a recording setup. And, you know, shit like having to cut like 40 seconds from, Pepsi Cola Addict and turn it into Twin Absorber, the, link thing. Like it's way different when you can actually hear your song in real time and know how long it is. Yeah. You know, that's a huge difference to me also in writing. It's like when you're just playing guitar to yourself or with your band and playing the song, you don't really understand how long it is. You have no concept of what the pacing is like from the listener's perspective.
Right. Right.
So I love being able to like actually listen to it and be like, has this gone on too long? Should this go on for a lot longer? You know, it's nice to be able to make those much more informed decisions. So, but other than that, you know, I just usually, I don't know. I think I can always sit down and like come up with a piece of music and like choose some chords and start to fuck with it and build it up. But having an inspired concept is always to me the
right.
That's the moment I'm writing a song when I'm like, oh, this is funny. Or this is like, you know, this is brutal. One of those two things usually.
Let me ask you this. You're not doing a release show?
Oh, we are.
There's nothing on your website.
We're like, it'll probably get announced like tomorrow or the next day.
Okay.
It's the 25th of February is the release show. And we're literally just waiting for the flyer from Hotel Vegas to announce it. Because we just announced the EP last week. Yeah. So that'll be us, Lila Tried, and PR Newman. That'll be a really good show. I just, as I mentioned earlier, got a credit card from Randolph Brooks Federal Credit Union. So order the new shirts from Rapaw today so that our school store has some cool pencils and erasers to sell at the show.
Yeah.
And so that'll all be come together soon. I think we were actually supposed to announce today, but we're just waiting on that flyer. So
that's good.
Which is one of those things that Samara has been totally spearheading. And it's like, oh, it's so fucking cool to watch someone like do like things on your behalf and like, you know, be the one to like, and like we have a great relationship with Hotel Vegas. Like, it's not like they're anything but awesome to us, but you know, to watch someone be the, you know, to have someone else send the email. It's like, hey, by the way, where are we at with this kind of thing? You know? Right. Cause I hate having to be like that. Like, how do I, how do I seem tactful? Thanks so much! Exclamation point. Like, at what point is this too much? You know,
how
like,
do I seem ambitious fucking, but not pushy?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's fucking beautiful to watch someone else do that. Yeah. Amazing. Like, yeah. What a rewarding thing.
Yeah. Well, congratulations, man. This EP, people are going to freak out. This is going to come out before the EP comes out. So I'll probably play Pepsi Cola Addict since it's out.
Cool. Yeah.
On the thing, but anything else people should know? They should go to your Bandcamp because it looks like you got a direct link there from your Instagram. So that's like the place to go to get stuff.
Instagram and Bandcamp are kind of where we exist, you know, and currently, if anybody's out there, please come by Vegas for the show on February 25th. That'll be really cool. And hopefully we'll have new music out sooner than later after that. I think probably the next round of new music, I think I'm going to do what a lot of people are doing and just put out a song at a time for a while.
Yeah.
Until we can afford to record a full batch of songs. Cause I think there's something exciting about the immediacy about putting something out that's actually quite fresh.
Totally.
And you know, so I'm just looking to delve more into that shit. But,
yeah, man.
Yeah. It's kind of all about the release show and the record. So,
well, congratulations. You made a great record.
Thanks. I really appreciate that.
And hopefully I'll be able to make it out to that release show. I don't have a show that night. So,
all right. Beautiful.
Be great. Is there anything else I'm missing?
I think we covered it. I mean, we talked about my high school ska bands and the record coming out next month.
So that's it, right? Obsession.
Turtleneck obsession. Yeah. You know, you got the Elliot Smith set list. I sneezed. Yeah. Jazz rock. You know, what else is there?
Well, dude, it's been great talking to you and great meeting you. I'm looking forward to meeting you in person. Like I really,
I'd love to kick it sometime. And thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. It was really fun to talk.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan. So,
all right. Thanks so much. Yeah, thank you.
Let me know whenever you're doing whatever, please come back on the show.
I'll buzz you for sure.
All right, man. Tell Avery I said hi.
Will do, will do.
All right, take care.
All right, man. Take care. Thanks again. Leading me depression. Down the line and right
chord progression. Go to heaven. That's Jackson Albrecht from Slow Mo Drags. What a great conversation. I really enjoyed talking to that dude. And I like that dude. Want to hang out on Friday, February 25th. Their Twin Absorber EP drops. Their single that you're hearing, that you just heard, and you're going to hear the rest of when I stop talking, Pepsi Cola Addict, is out now. Go to slowmodrags.com. Their EP Twin Absorber drops February 25th on Spaceflight Records. And also, they are playing Friday, February 25th at Hotel Vegas. That is their record release show. If you live in Austin, be there or be square. Go to slowmodrags for all your slowmodrags.com for all of your Slow Mo Drags needs. And gang, don't forget when you're out there checking out the slowmodrags.com, you can subscribe to How Did I Get Here? We have new shows every Tuesday and every Friday, or sometimes in this case, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, like college classes. It's like college classes, but super fun. You can listen to it while you do stuff. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Overcast, Stitcher, anywhere you find podcasts. New shows every Tuesday and every Friday, sometimes three shows a week, sometimes a From the Vault episode extra. At least two shows a week. Do it. Do it up and go to slowmodrags.com. Get their EP Twin Absorber Friday. All right? Have a great week. Whatever it is you're doing. Let's get down. Give the people what they want all the time. You're always losing. Think that you should prove it. Give the people what they want. They only want something.
stupid. Numb inside, so you feel.